So let's play a game of guess who, shall we? Who is from West Virginia, the son of a Mountain Stage band member, an architect living in Louisiana, and the drummer for seminal indie pop rock band Beach House? It's Graham Hill, and we chatted with him about all of that and more. So let me just go ahead. Let's like start this conversation. Who are you? What do you do? And what should we know about you?
So my name is Graham Hill, and I'm a native West Virginian. I'm a musician and an architect. So I kind of oscillate between two different lives, kind of like a Batman existence where, you know, I have like my business life where I, you know, design and build buildings. And then my music life where, you know, that's kind of my true spiritual passion is playing music. So I've just been really lucky to have that kind of dual path in my life. And so I, you know, depending on the year and the season and, you know, what opportunities are out there, I kind of drift back and forth between those two worlds.
Do you do landscapes, buildings, that sort of thing? Is that what you are as like an architect?
Yeah, I do. I actually work with my mother. We have a company in New Orleans called Concordia, and we do community-centered planning and design work. So, you know, there's a lot of traditional architecture involved in the practice, but there's also a lot of community engagement. So if there's a project that requires input from stakeholders or, you know, nearby residents or, you know, different kind of groups that are going to be served by the building or by the place, we get them involved in the design process. So we try to really make it democratic, and we're really turned off by all of the sort of fashion elements that go along with a lot of high profile architects that make everything very, you know, very much about style and kind of image. And so we try to stay away from that and let the ideas emerge through processes with people. And through building community, we have a lot of meetings and do a lot of kind of interactive workshops so that people can actually physically be involved in the design process. And so it's just, you know, it's just a more gratifying approach to me. But, you know, I spent time working at firms where we did corporate work, like designing grocery stores. And, you know, that was a good way to learn sort of the process of how the industry works and, you know, the necessary steps you have to go through to get something built. But as I got older, I just, you know, I got a little tired of that formula. And so my mom was living in New Orleans at the time. And, you know, obviously I had gone to school and had these skills to be an architect. And she was sort of like, you know, not too heavy on the pressure at first, but then eventually it just sort of made sense for us to work together. And, but yeah, it's been very fruitful, and I enjoy doing it. So I feel like I just lucked out. I happened to pick something that, you know, I think a lot of people see architecture as like an old man's profession because it just, you know, building buildings just takes a long time. And to get really good at doing it, you know, you kind of need to put decades into it. And so that's why a lot of the people who are famous for doing it are, you know, in their golden years. So I hope one day, you know, I'll get to that point where I get to do something that's maybe becomes like a landmark, you know, or something that helps to define a place. But, you know, at this point, I very much still feel like I'm in the learning mode.
And, you're talking about in the future, you know, being this kind of architect that makes something that kind of makes a difference. Do you consider that with music as well?
Yeah, I think that for me, music is much more about, like, experience and feeling. And I think that the best buildings do evoke that, you know, and so I just think that, you know, just by nature, like the moments that you have that are very moving with music are, you know, they're temporary. I mean, and obviously, you know, records exist so that you can continue to experience those things, but it's just a very different, you know, that's like, it's very, I would say, you know, that there's just so many more dimensions to the experience of buildings over time that, you know, they change with the climate, with the environment, you know, they sort of evolve. And like once a record is made, you know, your what you project onto the music can change over time, but the music stays the same. So I think there's a, yeah, I definitely I will always have like lasting, you know, moments in my life that were created around music that are, you know, for me personally very transformational. But I think in terms of like affecting other people, you know, it just seems to me like architecture is an easier path toward that, you know, kind of affecting like a larger swath of humanity. You know, I think, I do create my own music, but a lot of what I really just enjoy is just playing music with other people, you know, not necessarily having like the full authorship of it or being the songwriter or the, you know, the person in the limelight. It's just more, for me, music's always been about kind of getting together and like creating something that's magical, but that disappears like the same night, you know? So I kind of like that temporal quality of it, of music, and sort of the difference between the permanence of buildings and like the impermanence of music. I think that, you know, that just interests me.
Yeah. And that's spot on, because it feels like nowadays there's not exactly a landmark record. You don't really hear about that anymore. You don't hear something like standing the test of time that stopped around like, what, 2000s? So, you know, you go back and you hear of all these things that have been so great, these records that are just like top 100 of the past 100 years. They're always going to be at the top of those lists. And in just the last decade, there hasn't really been like a permanent record that everyone should know about that's going to stand the test of time. As opposed to buildings, I mean, unless you knock it down, they are there. They're there through all the decades and all the generations.
That's right. And I think that they, you know, some buildings, if you're lucky, they can evolve and adapt to, you know, many different changes of, you know, the human cycles of like culture and whatever people choose to identify with. But I think that there is something just about the physicality of it that's very permanent and lasting. And you know, nowadays buildings are built with much cheaper materials, and it's harder to make things last long as they used to. You know, we can't enslave people like the Egyptians did, you know, to make things out of stone. I mean, that's just horrible, you know. But so I think that there's just a lot about the way that the industries that support buildings have evolved that you know, are it's a challenge to make lasting things, but I think it's very much still possible.
I was just thinking when you were talking about that, if you were to match up, say, a national, you know, international landmark with maybe a record, because they share maybe some sort of similarity in how they connect with people or they've lasted however long, what connections could you make? Like, give an example of the building and give an example of a record that maybe corresponds to it.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one.
No, do it right now. I want you to give me 20 examples.
No, I can't really say that there's a landmark building that to me recalls an album, because it's for me, when I have those kind of moving, memorable experiences of listening to music and being somewhere, that it kind of gets cemented into my mind. It's much more about kind of a multitude of things and not necessarily an object. You know, it's like there are certain buildings that I just absolutely adore. Like the other day we were in Buffalo on this tour, and there's a building there by Lewis Sullivan, who's one of the, you know, they call him like the father of skyscrapers. He designed some of the first like steel frame buildings in the country. And his, so they're steel frame buildings. And, you know, normally you think of those as like very cold, and, you know, architects like Mies van der Rohe really like they prioritize kind of function over form, as they say. But Sullivan was sort of in this transition time when there was still a lot of craft involved in architecture, and so things weren't so austere. And there's a building called the Guarantee Building in Buffalo that we went to visit. And I took a couple of the guys who were on the road with us over to see it. And it's a work of art, and it's, you know, the building's 150 years old, and it looks fantastic. I mean, you know, I'm sure they've done work to help preserve it, but you know, it's just built from things that are very, very lasting. But it also has a level of detail and kind of an art sort of embedded into the architecture that's just, you know, it's very moving to me. It's very poetic, and so, you know, while I can't necessarily say that there's a specific record, you know, I do like music that also has those same qualities, that is very structured, but then also has like ornate things, you know, kind of flowing around it and on top of it to help kind of bring forth the you know, the subconscious reactions that I think come out a lot of times when you're in natural environments, you know. So that's kind of why my first thought about it was the, the lushness of Marvin Gaye's, Mercy, Mercy Me, and like being in a garden is like really sympathetic, you know, relationship between the two. I could see, you know, just to touch on something like a band that I like that's a current band, I really like Dan Snaith's project Caribou is I think a really wonderful, he's had a lot of albums and he's never made one album that I didn't just love. And I think a lot of the music is very ornate, but there's always at the core of it, there's like this kind of fundamental beat, you know, this like this rhythm that to me is like a Lewis Sullivan type building where you kind of have that core structure that sort of defines the proportions of things and makes things sort of seem like the right size and shape. But then on top of it, there's, you know, there's ornament and there's feeling that's a, you know, kind of woven into the structure that gives it a bit more life, you know? So, I definitely see the dualities all over the place, but, you know, I can't, at this moment, I could probably give you a bunch more of those if I had more time.
No, that was actually really good. I like that. You're like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And then you did it. That was great. No, I the only thing I could think of was like, maybe like Jay-Z's The Blueprint and then like the pyramids and then and then Illuminati. And then that was it. So
totally. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, the possibilities are endless.
Oh, yeah. Now, that'd be a pretty good BuzzFeed article. Like 16 records that correspond to landmarks, the natural wonders.
Man. Yeah, I love that idea. I mean, I could think of like, you know, places I've experienced that, you know, visually strike me in a certain way. And then thinking about, you know, music that it recalls, and, you know, like the Pompidou Center in Paris, you know, and then like Depeche Mode or something like that.
Oh, very, yeah. Like, ooh.
You know, just very kind of mechanic, you know, in how it's presented, and like everything is, you know, it's almost like industrial. So I think that there's, you know, Nine Inch Nails or whatever, it's like there are definitely visual, you know, there's also, I think a lot of new age music, you could say that about, you know, landscape relationships too. I mean, that kind of the the waves of some of that music and how it sort of, we've been listening to Mark Egan a lot on this tour, which is kind of funny. I don't know if you know him, but he's sort of like a jazz, virtuoso bass player guy. And he, it's this music, I'd actually never even really heard of him until Sky, who's playing bass with Beach House on this tour, he introduced me to him. And the music is very, I mean, you know, at first, listen, you're like, oh, this is kind of elevator music-y, but once you really give it a chance, it's like actually just gorgeous and just so dense, but it's like the whole thing moves in waves, you know. It's not, everything sort of flows around each other, and it's very organic, you know, versus the kind of the hard beat at the center. And I think, you know, that's a lot of what Beach House tries to do. You know, there's a lot of flow and transition and kind of like, you know, movement in the music.
Oh, yeah. Especially with the new record, Depression Cherry, like I was just listening to it again, and it's very trance-like. It seems like it just keeps on going, and there's little blips in the road, or it travels down maybe a little bit different path, but it's just a long road, and it's not really psychedelic, but it just kind of puts you in that kind of headspace.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a lot of that just emerges from how Alex and Victoria, who do all the songwriting, and their process is very much about repetition and kind of feeling things out. And so they'll, you know, they will purposely, you know, kind of repeat things and loop them until there's a groove happening, until like there's a feeling that emerges, and then that feeling will then push them to the next part of the song, you know. So it's very much emergent, I would say, like, and so yeah, the trance is a big part of it. It's about, you know, walking into a different kind of space and then being inside of it and sort of strapping yourself into like a, you know, space shuttle and just kind of being on the ride. And then eventually by the end of the album, you're like completely out, you know, you're somewhere else. And whether that's like asleep or, you know, in like a blissful kind of, you know, headspace, you know, it can be all those. And I actually think that's a wonderful thing. You know, friends who aren't as into the band who talk to me about it are like, oh, you know, sometimes the music gets a little like repetitive or the songs sound the same and all that. And what I tell them is like, well, that's actually kind of the point. And it's not that, you know, all the songs would sound the same, but it's more like the, you know, achieving that state of kind of entering a realm where you're aware of more subtle shifts, you know, which I think is much more, you know, how I think a lot of New Age thought and belief about consciousness and about awareness is that's what it's asking of you. So it's not to say that New Age music, because I think that, you know, if they heard me say that, they would probably like wince. But it's not. It is. There is something about that trance quality, just entering a zone where you're just you become more aware of subtlety and differentiation. That I think is. It can be very like sensual.
Now that you mentioned them, I want to go ahead and bring this up. You're the drummer, or you're a drummer that can be with the band, correct? Is that kind of what your role is?
Yeah, so I have a long history with these guys that predates the band, actually. Like, Alex and I became friends before Beach House was even starting. And
Alex is one of the founding members, along with Victoria.
Yeah, he's the guitar player, and he and Victoria started the band, I think, in 2005. And so he and I were friends before that, I kind of saw the genesis of the band and was a huge fan of their first album and listened to it all the time. And I actually just secretively, I had dreams of like recording a demo of myself, like playing drums to their music just cause I loved it so much. And I never did that, but I did. I mean, I would do it a lot at home by myself and just loved the transportive quality of the music. And then, you know, we remained friends, and then as the project grew and as they started to, you know, get more recognition and start to tour more, they realized that, you know, adding like an element of percussion and live drums was actually, for the live setting, could be a really cool thing. So starting in 2008, they released the album Devotion, which is their second one. And we started, you know, the first shows I did with them were actually in Europe. They invited me, and at that time they were working with a couple different drummers, so it wasn't like a come be part of this band. It was like, would you like to help us bring these songs to life in a live setting? And I gladly accepted, and obviously it was like a dream come true for me, because I'd already envisioned this, and then, you know, the opportunity presented itself, and started to play, and it was magical. You know, it was just a very very wonderful experience, and, you know, they're dear friends of mine, so it just kind of combines the, you know, that feeling of mutual appreciation with, you know, also being really, really excited to, you know, create these moments of, you know, of trance and of transportive with music. And so, but yeah, it has evolved quite a bit since then. I mean, obviously in Devotion, I didn't play on that record, but when we were playing those songs live, it was, you know, a lot more percussive, subtlety. You know, the drums were very much like, they're much more in the background. And so then once Teen Dream, they started writing the songs on Teen Dream, they invited me to record with them. And so we went to a studio in Woodstock, New York, and an old church called Dreamland. And we spent a few weeks there, and the songs kind of just, you know, something happened there where there was this new level that was achieved of intensity and feeling in the music. And so the drums just naturally kind of rose to meet that. So the drums became more, expressive. And, you know, there's much more kind of force in the drumming on that record. And so that was, you know, once we started to do shows, For that record, it was much more of a, you know, the drums were much more of a part of the presentation of the music. Actually, even on stage, you know, during the Devotion tours, I was in the back, like a traditional kind of rock drumming setup where, you know, drums are in the back. And then on Teen Dream, we started setting up in kind of a inverse triangle formation. So Victoria's voice is obviously like the center of the sound of Beach House, and so she's at the middle of the stage. And then Alex and I were, at that point, we were playing as a three-piece, but the drums kind of moved to the front of the stage, and they were on the side, and Alex was sort of on the other side playing guitars and bass pedals. But yeah, there was a physical thing that happened to help present the music where the drums were more present. And so that was kind of an interesting shift and took a lot of learning and trying things out to get the energy right on stage. But yeah, and so then I took a long break after the Teen Dream cycle and had two children and moved my family to New Orleans and did a whole bunch of other things that were necessary for me to feel like I was not just wasting my life away pursuing some dream of some rock star dream, but it was it was good. And actually time away always I think is a good thing. And so they had they released another album called Bloom, and the drums were very integral in that album. But that was our friend Dan, who was a fantastic drummer, and he was actually living in Baltimore at the time, so the three of them really worked a lot together on the arrangements of the music. And so I was kind of out of the loop for that whole cycle, and would go see them when they came to town, and it was really fun to catch up with them. And then actually the thing that brought us back together was this one-off show that we did last summer. Alex and Victoria had organized a group of musicians to cover a record by Gene Clark called No Other, and we performed it live at a festival in England, and Alex called me up and asked me if I wanted to play drums for it. And it was just one of those things where I was like, well, I've never heard that record, but I guess I can learn it. So I spent a couple months in New Orleans just playing in my practice space, learning songs, and then flew to London and had a day to rehearse and then perform in front of 10,000 people, which was pretty crazy. But it went well, and it was really fun, and it was kind of a magical night. So yeah, all of a sudden it was like, hey, maybe I can get back into doing this. And then a couple months later, Alex called me again and said, we're thinking about coming to record down in Louisiana, and that was the sessions for Depression Cherry. So yeah, we got involved. We started that, I guess, in December of last year, and then I would kind of come up from time to time, take a break from architecture and spend a few days in the studio with them, and did that, over the course of a couple of months. And then at the end of it, had this, amazing body of songs that, I just felt very lucky to be a part of it, because it was, it just was one of those things that felt like the universe just sort of, allowed it to happen, and I was in the right place at the right time. So now I find myself back out on the road with these guys and, doing these songs live every night. It's really fun.
Would you almost call yourself then, when you started up with them, like the freelance drummer, and now you've basically been hired on as like a part-time drummer? Is that kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, right now I'm like the drummer,
You're not, full time. Cool.
Yeah. I'm doing, I'm like on the payroll. So
with benefits.
It's kind of a funny thing. I mean, but it's also when what I've realized is that, that 5-year hiatus that I took, that the whole Beach House production just completely, grew and rose to the level of, being able to present it like with real professionalism and consistency every single night. So there's like, there's this whole team of people now who are like part of the team who make it happen every night, and they're all really, really good at what they do. So I feel like I'm, the drummer is like one of many roles that make it come to life every night. And so I feel like I'm very much like a, part of this, this Voltron like thing that happens every night, and I try to do the best that I can. And, not every night is perfect, but I have a lot of other people around me to kind of help ensure that the show comes across with a lot of magic and energy.
Now, you've also had a history with Paper Cuts and Vetiver. How did you get involved with those two groups as well?
Yeah, well, I went to grad school at Berkeley. So I moved from Virginia to California. And the first 3 years I was out there, I was really focused on school. So I wasn't doing a whole lot of playing drums. I was starting to explore recording and doing, doing a solo project that I have. But it took me away from the whole world of, playing in bands and being a drummer. And so eventually, after a few years, I kind of missed that. I missed the physicality of like playing drums and being creating music with other humans, you know. So it was actually through, interestingly enough, that was the era of MySpace. I don't know if you remember that.
Of course I remember that.
You may be too young for it, but...
Yeah, I'm eight. I'm too young.
Okay. No, but it was like, I don't know, 2004, 2005, when it was really a thing and everybody had their like top eight friends. And, you know, one of Beach House's, you know, so as I said before, I was a huge fan of Beach House when they first started. And one of their top eight bands was this band called Paper Cuts. And I, you know, was living in the Bay Area and I happened to, you know, come across their page and I was like, oh, this band's from San Francisco. I really like them. And so my wife actually bought us tickets for like a Valentine's Day show to go see Grizzly Bear and Paper Cuts together at this place called Great American Music Hall. And it's a, you know, it's a lovely space in San Francisco, very storied venue. It was a really, really nice night. And you know, Grizzly Bear is great. They're very, very good performers. But the Paper Cuts show, they opened the show, and actually that was my favorite music of the night. I was like, I really like this music, you know, just had kind of reminded me of the Zombies or something, like just had this kind of timeless quality to it. And I hit Jason up on MySpace. I was like, hey man, you know, I'm friends with Alex, and you know, I like your music, and you know, one of my first uses of the internet to connect me to someone, and it was great. Jason and I met up and at his like home studio in San Francisco, and we just started jamming, and he asked me to you know, play some shows with him, and so I just started doing it. And then through Jason, you know, ended up meeting Andy Kabik from Vetiver, and ended up playing drums for Andy as well. And so, yeah, just this, you know, one of these things that it was kind of, it took a few years for me to reach that connectedness to the community in San Francisco. But once I did, it was sort of like, you know, it was a great fit. I really liked their music, and, you know, it just seemed like there was kind of a consistent opportunity of, you know, I was available. I was living there. I was working, kind of doing some freelance architecture stuff at the time. So I had a little bit of a flexible schedule. So yeah, I made time for music in my life, like I always do. And, just, you know, was lucky enough to be working with some people who are making great music and writing great music. So I, it's just another one of those instances of kind of being in the right place at the right time, and, you know, not being afraid to reach out to people and put myself out there, and more times than not, it ended up being really great.
Yeah. And I think that kind of openness to do whatever, just kind of go with the flow and just be excited about whatever project you're working on, I think that's something that just, it really works. It helps you get places that you never expected and meet new people, and then you meet other new people and start doing other new things. And I mean, I've done that too with my career here. It just went from one thing into another, me never expecting, you know, the next thing would happen, but open to whatever possibilities would come. And yeah, I love that, the mentality. I love it.
Yeah, that mindset is so, so crucial.
So let's talk about you and your time in West Virginia. You're raised here. You said you went to Hurricane High School, correct?
I did.
Yeah. How was it? How was it being raised here in West Virginia, and just music scene growing up here?
Yeah, well, you know, I had a unique experience, I would say, because I was raised on an intentional community that was founded by my parents and their friends. And a lot of what brought those people together was music. And so my dad was in the Putnam County Pickers, and then, you know, eventually became part of the Mountain Stage Band. And so, you know, I was always surrounded by music and people kind of appreciating music, not only, you know, playing it, but also, you know, like my mom was, she played piano growing up, but wasn't really like an active musician during my childhood. But, you know, even when we were just around the house and stuff, she would always be playing music. There was always music on, music around. And so that was, you know, just a big part of my upbringing, was being surrounded by music. And then also just the place I was raised in was, you know, it was out in the sticks and the, you know, the hollers of Putnam County. And, it was wonderful. It was fully immersed. I mean, I didn't really have, you know, that kind of normal suburban upbringing where, you know, you walk over to a friend's house and, you know, you eat like grilled cheese sandwiches or whatever. I mean, it was more of a, you know, it was kind of this bubble, out in the woods, and there were other kids that, were in the same situation. So it wasn't like, you know, I didn't have friends, but all of the, you know, it was almost like cousins or something, having other kids of my parents' friends who were all also living there at the time. And so we had this very unique experience that was very much in a natural setting, and we spent a lot of time outside, and, you know, the seasons were just, that's something I miss a lot. I miss the time when I was living in the Bay Area, and also now in New Orleans, it's the seasons are very, very different. And West Virginia, I was just very aware of that, and just feeling that connection to nature and the seasons, and, you know, having that kind of mark the passage of time, you know, because there was a lot of eras of my childhood that really felt, you know, I didn't have those like teenage angst years, you know, like it just never happened for me. I was just kind of enjoying the ride.
Yeah. Nowadays, I feel like the angst is mostly coming from the internet.
Yeah. Well, my dad was a total dork, still is. So he had a really, you know, he had like the Apple IIe, you know, with like the games on it. I mean, even though we were living way out in the sticks, like he was an early computer guy. So my sister and I would like sign on to AOL and, you know, go into chat rooms.
Oh, yeah. Like, AIM.
People. And, you know, there's like those early experiences that are really funny. And I mean, we definitely had them. We weren't void of, you know, modern world. I think for my 10th birthday, or maybe it was Christmas that year, my dad got us like a camcorder. And, you know, we never had cable or anything. And we didn't really watch a lot of TV growing up. So we would always like make, you know, our parents were very much encouraging us to make things, to create things. And you know, it's actually really fun now, because we have all these like records of childhood that are like, I have cassette recordings of myself and my sister just, you know, interviewing each other. And it's, you know, we had there's a lot of experimentation and kind of using technology in a fun way to try to capture, you know, our ideas and our feelings at that age, and just being goofy and, you know, creating something. And so that was just, you know, that's kind of how we passed the time.
You should totally take those tapes and digitize them and then sample them, like just splice them and put them in whatever you're going to do as a solo project. Because I saw you have like Roman ruins, which, you know, kind of cool. You should totally do that.
That's my solo recording project that, you know, really is more of a way of helping me understand what's going on in my life, kind of a processing of the subconscious reality. That, you know, actually the first, I only have two full-length records from that project, and they both came after each of my children was born. So there was a lot of just intense feelings and emotions that came along with those chapters of my life. And so I tried as best I could to capture them through music. And I think that's a cool idea. I haven't thought about going back to those old recordings, but I'm sure there's some gold in there that I can probably find a place for.
Oh, yeah. And then take one of the photos of you and your sister together from, you know, like the 80s, 90s, and then put like some filters on it, maybe like rough up the edges. Done. Cover art.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Completely. There it is.
So what's something that we should know about you and the band moving forward?
So I would say that this band is the hardest working band in America. Feels like that to me anyway. But there's a collective, I think, passion for doing this. And that if you have a chance to see us live, it's a completely immersive and kind of can be a very moving and memorable experience. So I would highly recommend, you know, trying to see the music presented live, because it's, you know, there are a lot of differences between that and the record. The record is it is what it is, and it's a beautiful thing, but it's things take a different shape in the live setting, which I think is it's very much encouraged by Alex and Victoria. They want you know, every night to be a little bit different. So we're playing a different set list every night. You know, we've learned, you know, something like 50 songs for this tour cycle. So we, you know, there's a lot, there's a big repertoire out there, and we are going to be doing all of that. So, you know, for instance, at the end of the year, we have a couple city stands where we do multiple nights in the same venue. And those, I think, are going to be really fun because we're going to be doing different set lists every night and trying to make the experience different versus just kind of, you know, doing a Xerox copy of the set list every night and sort of banging it out.
Mm-hmm.
Really trying to make every night special and every night different. So, you know, that would be my biggest thing is just, you know, if you have the chance to come see us live, please do it. Cause it's, you know, I get chills on stage every night just playing. So, you know, I'm hoping that's how people feel in the audience. And I've already had on this run, I've already had a few people tell me that.
Well, what's something that you see the band becoming maybe in the next couple of years? Do you think the sound's going to change?
I don't think it's necessarily about the sound changing, but I think that the band is definitely going to move more toward kind of making the presentation of the music a very transportive and kind of trance-like experience. And so right now there are plans to start to do multiple shows in that have different arrangements. So like one night there may be only Alex and Victoria on stage, and then the next night it may be like three-piece band or four-piece band. So I think that there's going to be a lot of experimentation with how the music is presented on stage, which is cool. So that, you know, the songs on the records will be rearranged and will be you know, dissected in order to present them differently, which I think brings new life to the older song. So yeah, that's in the works, and you know, I think we'll be probably into next year. We'll be changing up the live format and arranging things differently so that the music can stay fresh to us and be exciting to play every night.
I hear the soundtrack going on in the back. What's being played right now?
Oh, that's just Tim, our front of house engineer. That's his soundtrack playlist. So he's, that's a Portishead song. We call it the Machine Gun song. So it's just, it's kind of, I mean, it's beautiful. That band's really cool, but he basically chooses a playlist that has the entire like sonic spectrum in it, so that, you know, he knows that the house PA can handle what we're going to bring.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Fun fact, right there.
Yeah,
playing some Portishead at a beach house show. That's great.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, you know, female lead vocal, some electronic elements. I mean, not too far off, actually.
That's pretty cool. Well, okay. Yeah. Well, I should probably ask you too. What should we look for, like, for you and what you're doing in the future? Should people like look to you for architecture and for that kind of work? Should they look for maybe like a, you know, Roman ruins kind of work?
Yeah, I think I'm going to continue to, you know, do the Batman Bruce Wayne thing for as long as you know, it's sustainable for my family. I mean, that's really the biggest determining factor is like, if, you know, if I feel like things are getting difficult with, you know, me being gone a lot, then it's probably going to be shifting more toward, you know, me focusing on doing solo recording projects, which is the Roman Ruins project. And yeah, I think that there's definitely going to be more music from that over the next couple of years. I've been working with my friend Hunter, who runs Gold Robot Records. Yeah, he's encouraging me to put together an instrumental album, it's been something I've wanted to do for a long time. So kind of working on that very slowly in between touring right now. But I'd say in the next couple of years, I should have something released.
Ooh.
And otherwise, yeah, I'll continue to do architecture, and you know, Concordia, the company I work with, will continue to, you know, try to make, you know, community-centered buildings happen. And you know, I think there's going to be, that's a lifelong project. So I hope that there'll be buildings that people can visit that I've helped, you know, help design, that it will be wonderful experiences, will be landmarks, and will be permanent. You know, will help to enhance, you know, life in those places. So I'd say that my drumming right now is a bit more proficient than my architect skills, but, you know, that just happens whenever I spend a few months focusing on one of the two, then I get my groove back.
Chances are like night disappear.
Beach House just released their fifth full-length record, Depression Cherry, on Sub Pop Records. As for Graham Hill, the drummer, you can catch his solo work as Roman Ruins on Bandcamp and on social media. To hear more of their music, tune into A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.